from all of us.
Thank you for the question. I think it's a multi-layered question. I mean, the question, I think, revolves around what our role is in the world right now in relation to what's going on internally in Iran. There are a couple of things that I would caution against in terms of regime change, aside from whether it's a popular thing to do or not. But if we talk about regime change non-militarily, and you're alluding to the restraints that we have on our military right now. But if we're talking about some sort of a soft revolution, you know, having somebody on Voice of America say, okay, everybody rise up and, you know, do your thing. We have to remember, this is not Iran in 1953. That is, 1953 there was a coup d'etat that was helped by the CIA and the MSIS. And Mr. Moshiri alluded to that, against the democratically elected Prime Minister Mossadegh. It's not 1953 Iran. That is, our agents are not as pervasive in Iran now as they were under as guests of the Shah. There are American operatives, surely, but they don't have the degree of leverage that they used to. And when you're talking about being able to organize some sort of a mass protest revolution from the outside in a way that Iranians are just blindly going to follow, like robots, and say, yes, America, we will do this for you, or for ourselves, thank you for supporting us. I know that's not what you're saying, but I'm saying there are people who believe that. I think that's misguided, and I don't think that's going to be successful, and we are sort of fooling ourselves a little bit about how much power we do have to change situations inside Iran. Now, Iranians are very, I would say, insecure about their own abilities. There are Iranians today whose own parents participated in the revolution, but who have this conspiracy theory that it was the British who organized the Iranian revolution. It wasn't the Iranians. They were just taking orders from the British. It's not true. Their own parents willingly went out and risked their lives in the street. So Iranians are going to have to do this on their own. And I'm sorry if that's insulting to people. There are human rights violations in the Sudan, in Saudi Arabia. We have to sort of decide what kind of country we want to be. Do we want to be the moral crusader? And is that really in our best interest? And is that helping anybody? Because I believe it's going to hurt Iranians if we start going down this path. Because it'll give the regime another reason and more ability to crack down on the very people we're trying to help.
I tried to answer the coalition for this gentleman. He's right. It would be very nice to have a coalition. But let's not forget that the United States is the sole superpower in the world and has wiped out interest in the Persian Gulf. And let me tell you that from 2020 to 2025, there is no more oil left in the world but Persian Gulf. So whoever controls the region, he would have a strategic leverage over China and other, you know, other powers. So there is a U.S. interest in Persian Gulf, there is U.S. interest in Iraq and the whole region, and in all of that, if you're considering that. But it would be very nice, as a matter of fact, to have a coalition put together, as George Bush did, the father, the first war with Iraq. But Europeans, they have their own agenda. They have been benefiting with all of these sanctions against Iran by the United States, that in Senegal the trade is very high. And the most they did is say, oh, let's have a critical dialogue. Critical dialogue is a good thing to do with these mullahs. And critical dialogue meant nothing for people of Iran. We would have been dealing with these people, selling them parts, computers, technology, and everything else. And then we have China and Russia who have their own interests in the region. China is a growing power, and Russia, so at the moment I'm talking, at this point in time, so far, is much more difficult to put a coalition together. And let's not forget the danger of a nuclear Iran that would create, as a matter of fact, an armed race, nuclear armies in the region, it would be very dangerous. Those countries are unstable, and they are not democratic. God forbid, I think George Bush is thinking about that. When he says the third world war would happen if Iran gets nuclear weapons, he's probably right. Because if Iran gets nuclear, so does Saudi Arabia and the Korean Gulf states, In Egypt and Jordan and all of that was very, very dangerous. And let's not forget the defensive parameter of Israel, which is a very sensitive issue. So what I think is unfortunate that the war is looming over the area, no matter how United States bogged up in Iraq, and when it comes to white house interests of the United States and matter of national security, I think there will be an air war, if not a ground war, unfortunately. Thank you.
There is no democracy in Iran.
No, I never say that.
Iran is moving for the last 150 years toward something that I believe could lead to democracy on its own. Despite foreign interference, Iranians have stepped up to the plate and fought their own government whenever they thought it was necessary. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, you said that shows this democracy. That means we in the United States, which we have a lot of reporters, we should have thousands and thousands of reporters or writers in the prison?
No, I think I'm not making myself clear. I mean that it's a symptom of the bravery of Iranians in the face of a horrible regime. That is, they are willing to risk their lives for freedom. That's different than saying that people should be in jail. I'm not saying that.
Do you think maybe just the first person writes something like you don't know if Mr. C. Jones or D. C. Jones, they get him, put him in jail, and then they gave him something to kill him? That's why they have just a few in prison, because nobody really have a choice to talk or write about something. I'm sure you didn't see that portion. And also, the second one, somebody asked something a few minutes ago, and you said, I'm not saying Iranian regime, it's a pure Muslim. Is that correct? You said
right.
That?
That's correct.
Now, since you said you didn't read anything about Quran...
I didn't say I didn't read anything. I said I didn't put it in my book.
Okay. How much do you know about Muslim to compare this government being a pure Muslim or not pure Muslim?
I'll explain to you what I mean. Do you want me to explain to you what
sure.
I mean? The Quran is very, very limited on practical, applicable laws. That is, it can be put in a modern society. When you read the Quran, you see a lot of the verses that were quoted. You don't have a blueprint for government that is applicable to the 21st century. Over the courses of, let's talk about Shiism, the Imams, the 12 Imams that lived until the 9th century, they established an oral tradition that was carried out in considered law. The practice of Shiism with diverse mujtahids, with diverse grand ayatollahs, when people had the right in Shiism to go to different ayatollahs for guidance, okay? That's ijtihad. And the ayatollah who they decided was better for them, that's who they would align themselves with. Khomeini changed that. And he said, no, we only need one person who's on top of the hierarchy, and who's not an imam, who's not an infallible leader, but who is a political leader. And so he changed the way Shiism was practiced through the centuries. The problem with trying to understand the behavior of a modern nation, a contemporary nation state with an oil ministry and a military and a nuclear program, and you try to look through the pages of the Quran, you're not going to find a lot of people. And the way the current supreme leader got elected is even a contradiction of Khomeini's own situation, because he wasn't even a grand ayatollah.
So you really read the Quran, or you heard about it?
No, I've read it. I've read most of it. I've read much of the Bible, but more of the Quran than the Bible.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much for your questions. Please stick around. There are so many questions over on that side. And I want to thank both you gentlemen for coming in tonight. A lot of thought-provoking conversation. The conversation will continue over there. You're going to be signing some books as well. And thank you all for coming. Thank you.